No, it's a good question.
All right, I'll give you a little bit of instruction for it. So, God willing, just ask what sugya we're starting with. So, we're starting, the Gemara is going to talk about a sleeping person. And the liability that comes within that context is the ostensible title of the sugya that we're talking about. I think that's what I put on top of the Mar Makomos. But we'll see there are major, major yesodos that will emerge from that particular discussion that's going to affect a lot of things. And it's going to take us at least over the next day or so to different places in terms of liability of Nezikin, and issues that affect really a huge number of cases. Perhaps every case when you have Nezikin will draw upon some principles that we'll see here. But before getting to that, I did want to start fresh, but I can't resist mentioning this, that kind of coincidental. So here you see the sugya talks about somebody who's asleep and what kind of liability he has for damage done when he's asleep. So I remembered, I have a sefer on my shelf at home, the Tshuvas Palge Mayim. It's written by a Rav in Antwerp. And I remember that he has a discussion there about the halachos regarding the status of somebody who's asleep and the responsibility, the chiyuv mitzvahs of one who is asleep. So I thought he might discuss this. So I opened up the sefer to find that section, and I found it, but I couldn't tell that he was necessarily getting into so much that was so relevant to hear. But I happened to notice the tshuva immediately before it. And the tshuva immediately before it, he was talking about the liability for damaging property of sentimental value. So even though we discussed that already pre-midterm and we've moved on, it's hard not to take a look, and it's hard not to notice the semi-synergy and the hashgacha that puts that discussion right in front of us. So just one point that I wanted to share with you. So he did talk about the angle that we discussed, that presumably the issue should revolve around whether one who pays for a damage, is he paying for restoring the item, or is he paying for the loss that is inflicted upon the owner? And he does cite the Nesivis that we spoke about and spend some extensive time discussing whether the Nesivis is correct or not. And if you recall, again, the Nesivis' position that if something can't be sold, so then it doesn't really count as far as Teshulim and Nezikin are concerned. So he discusses that at some length. That's an interesting Mar Makom, if you like, with a lot of other Mar Makom was contained within it. At one point he mentions, which is also something that we should bring up, it's discussed in other Sfarim as well, there is an interesting machlokas between the Chafetz Chaim, as he's quoted in one place, and the Chazon Ish. And in regards, let's say somebody goes up to somebody's house and smashes their window. So he has to pay for the window that he smashed. But how do you evaluate the cost of that? How do you assess the value of the window? What would you say? Yeah, Sam? How much they bought the window for. So do you often buy the windows in your house?
Yeah, cost to replace it.
Cost to replace it. Okay, so that puts you in good Chazon Ish territory, which is a pretty exciting place to be. But the Chafetz Chaim had a different understanding based on Gemaras that we've seen. On the surface, you can hear where he's coming from. It says that that shouldn't really be the way that you assess it, but rather what you do is you figure out the value of the house, and then you subtract from it the value of the house with the broken window. So that kind of scale is probably going to make it kind of a negligible cost. But on the surface, we could see where that's consistent with what we find in Hilchos Nezikin, right? That if you break something, so you figure out what it's worth now, and you pay the difference. So what this guy did was he basically broke your house. So let's figure out what the house was worth before, and what the house is worth now. So it makes sense, but it leaves you with a very insignificant cost then, presumably, for that window. So the Chazon Ish understood differently. The Chazon Ish understood that it depends on what the kind of approach would be. If this is something that is sold, and that would be the next step in order to fix what happened, so then, okay, you assess what the value is and what the value was, and then that's how you address the situation. But something that the approach would be, not that you're going to now sell something, but you're going to get a new one, but you're going to fix that item. So then we look at it as the cost of fixing that part of the structure. So that's what Shmuley said, that it makes sense to look at it. How much does it cost to replace the window, not what's the value of the house subtracting the window. So that also enters into the larger question of what exactly Nezikin and its Teshlumen are meant to accomplish. He also notes there that there's another Nesivus which sounds a little differently, because here the Nesivus that we've mentioned sounds like the purpose of Tashlumen is to pay back the value, and if there's no value, then there isn't anything to pay. So he has a raya from another Nesivus that really there is an obligation on the Mazik to restore the item that was broken. And that's consistent with what we saw in the Rambam and the Ravid about the Karka, that one is really obligated to fix the Karka that he destroyed. But when it's not possible to do that, that's when we start looking at it through the prism of what is the monetary value. And that's where that question comes up. Okay, if you can't sell it anywhere, then maybe it doesn't have monetary value. But again, others disagreed with that, and that was the approach that we discussed. So if anyone's interested in seeing more Makoros on this issue, again, take a look at the Chuvas Palge Mayim and Chelik Aleph and Simon Samach Beis, where he discusses what we just mentioned and much more. So just a little footnote, a little hosafa to that discussion. Sammy?
Yeah, so just, excuse me, if you're looking to sell the house, let's say, and you have an item, I'm just trying to like understand how it ties back to sentimental value. If you have an item that has sentimental value, it's not attached to the house, like let's say, a kiddush, whatever, something that's very close to you, you would sell the house, and you're looking to sell the house, so you'd have to subtract all that value if you're looking to replace it at some point. Like let's say that kiddush got broke.
Well, the Kiddush Cup isn't part of the house really at all, so it's hard to see it in that equation.
So you only have to do this as something that is attached to the house?
Yeah, something that's a discrete object, for sure we would look at it as an object by itself. But what the Chafetz Chaim was saying by the window, he says the window is part of the house. So now the house is missing one window, or is one window broken? So we seem to see that in general the Teshlumen is calculated that way, that we look at the object, and how is the object efficient? So if the object is the whole house, so then why don't we just subtract the window from the house? So from that scale, you're going to come to a very insignificant number. And that's where the Chazon Ish took a different approach. He thought that that's not the way you would relate to it. This is not the kind of situation where how do you fix a broken window? You don't fix it by selling the house. You fix it by fixing the window. I guess maybe some very wealthy people discard their houses if they break a window, but I think the average person will fix the window, so that should be the proper lens by which to look at it. Okay, so that was just a irresistible hosafa to our previous discussion. So now we have a line here in the Gemara which really opens up some very important questions, even though it seems like it's a very specific type of scenario. But there's a lot that's included in this discussion. So the Gemara tells us, so what exactly are we talking about when we list the Arba Avos in the Mishnah, and we say that that what's common about these elements is that their style is to do damage. So the Gemara says, sure, it's Derech is Lahazik. And the Gemara says, yeah, if it's a shor mu'ad. So, okay, we have to establish that that's the case. So then the Gemara asks, in this one line here, well, what about Adam? So So some of my best friends are people. Is that what you're saying? That people darkam lahazik, people their nature is to be mazikin. Odam darko lahazik. So says the Gemara, yeah, biyoshing. If somebody is sleeping. So teachers certainly have got very upset at seeing people sleep, but still that sounds a little much. Right? Yoshing darko lahazik. Just because someone's sleeping, that makes him dangerous? Is that really the way to look at it? So what does the Gemara say to that? Yeah, because people, when they're sleeping, they move around. Kevin dekayif upashit orcheihu. Since they tend to stretch and to toss and turn, so therefore, yes, it's dangerous. It's dangerous to other things that are in the way. So essentially, what does this mean practically speaking? All right, Sam, you want to say something? That's what it sounds like it means. Right, that basically, and just to also kind of clarify, it gives us a different focus on what we're talking about, at least as far as the Mishnah is concerned, about Adam as Mazik. Right. Normally, when we think of Adam HaMazik, we're thinking of a person who decides he wants to break something. And that's what we are getting into here. When we talk about Adam HaMazik in this context, and the idea that it's included in the Avos Nezikin, so what we really mean is what the Mishnah says. I don't remember if I put the Mishnah itself on the list, so probably Kedai just to look at it together. Mishnah and Chavav and Aleph, Adam Mu'ad La'olam. So a person is always considered to be in the status of Mu'ad, Ben Shogeg Ben Mezid. So whether he is Mezid, he's intentionally inflicting damage, or if it's not intentional, if he's a Shogeg, Ben Er Ben Yashin, whether he is awake or asleep. Either way, he is considered to be Mu'ad. Sima Sein Chavero V'Shiver Asakeil M'Shalim Nazik Shalim. And therefore, if he inflicts harm on someone, he blinds someone, even if it was done b'shogeg, as Rashi fills in over there in Chavav, or he breaks their kelim, whatever it is, he has to pay nezek shalom. Okay, so it seems like within that context that that's what we're talking about here. Jed?
Why does the Mishnah have to mention mezid and shogeg and then also air? And
right, so that's itself interesting, right? Because you have to figure out, first of all, Mezid and Shogeg seems to create two different models, right? And that's something we'll have to explore a little bit further, right? And especially also when we saw in that last sugya, and we mentioned the possible chiluk in terms of the nature of Teshlumei Nezek between Adam HaMazik and Mamono Shel Hizik. Right? Could it be that when you're dealing with a person, that there also, even the person himself kind of has two different hagdaras, that there's the person who decides he wants to be mazik somebody, in violation of however many of the yisurim we talked about on the first day, or is there also a person's self, kind of in the sense of like mamono, that a person is like his own pet, his own animal, that even things that he's not trying to do, he has a certain responsibility to make sure that his pet isn't going out and harming people, or his cow isn't going out and doing things. So too, his body may do things that he's not actively trying to do, but he has liability for that as well. And it sounds like our Gemara here on Dav Dalid is talking about something along those lines. Right? Somebody who is not looking to hurt anyone, but essentially his body is doing things that he's not aware of because he's asleep, and nonetheless there's a liability there. Now that could go a little bit to Jed's question, the idea of including a sleeping person. So I mentioned that Sefer Pal Gemayim has a whole kuntras about sleeping and doesn't, as far as I could tell, have to look at it more carefully, get into this, but it does just by its very nature. The whole question of what is the status of a person who's asleep, right, as far as mitzvos, as far as any other question, This has all kinds of nafka minas itself. If somebody is asleep and he's missing Zman Kriya Shema, so do we say that he's pater at that time? Do we say that that's an onus? Do we say that that's a pshia? Does it make a difference what the circumstances are? There are all kinds of questions as far as what is the nature of that state. So presumably, it would seem on the surface like it's even less than a shogeg. A shogeg is you do something without thinking about it, but at least you're doing it. Or you do something without knowing the circumstances. Maybe it's a better way to put it. But maybe a person who's mamish asleep should be in a whole different category. So the idea of any liability for something that you do in your sleep is itself interesting. And again, this plugs into our day one kind of question. Is the chiv of Teshlumei Nezikin because of some kind of avera? Is it because of some kind of guilt? Or is it because of something more subtle than that? So the idea that you can be liable for what you do when you're asleep is itself interesting. And it does, in this context, present your body as if it's like an animal, as if it's something that's not a part of you, and that we're not necessarily talking about deliberate decisions here as much as we're talking about the achrayus that you have to guard damaging forces under your control. Now, the Rishonim quote Yerushalmi. And this Yerushalmi is important, and if you had a chance to look at it inside, but it's quoted by Tosfos over here, it's quoted by the Rashba, and ultimately it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch as well. So a pretty important statement to the Yerushalmi. It says this Yerushalmi, so look at Tosfos for a second. Yesh. Sorry? In Bava Kamma, right. So, but here, Tosfos quotes it, looking at it from Tosfos, Yerushalmi, Yesh di Yoshein lo mechayev. So, there are situations where a person won't be liable if he's asleep. What's the situation when he is liable? Ela kishehishkiv atzmo eitzel hakelim. A person is only going to be liable if he knowingly went to sleep, he lay down next to whatever vulnerable kelim there are. Brings you into their house and says, here's my priceless Ming Dynasty vase, and you decide, oh, that sounds like a great place to take a nap. So then that puts you in liability. Aval im yoshein v'heviu kelim eitzlo. Let's say you're already sleeping on the floor and you're tossing and turning. And your host says, you know what, this seems like a great place to move my priceless Ming Dynasty vase to. So Vishavran, and then you in your sleep, you broke them, Patim. Tehem Garmulo. In that line we have to see what to do with. Vachir Hayashan Vahala Chavero Lishan Eitzlo, Vihiziku Zazeh. So let's say you are taking a nap, and then your friend says, oh, okay, this seems to be a nap place, so I will also take a nap right next to him. And boom. You get whapped in the face. So, ha'achron harishon pater v'ha'achron chayev. So the first guy, he went to sleep first. It's a good moral, right? The one who goes to sleep first is pater. The early sleeper, I don't know, whatever it is, but doesn't catch the worm or doesn't catch the chiv. But whatever it is, so that seems to be an interesting moral of the story. Make sure to go to sleep first. But the one who lay down first here is going to be Potter, and the second one is Chayev. Hi.
Do we want to put any significance on Tosfos making it seem like they're both hitting each other, or we can understand the case that the first guy is hitting? Doesn't it say Zizi
Kuzadze? Right, they are hitting each other, but the question is whose fault is it that they're hitting each other? So it seems to be it's the second guy's fault.
But there would the whole being no difference if, like,
on the oh, you're saying so? Let's say the only one who gets hurt is the second guy. No, so what seems clear here is that it's still the second guy's fault, and that's something we'll have to get into. Now, parenthetically, Ravitzchuk Zilberstein, Kedarka Bakodesh, has a fascinating scenario over here. It says, let's say it's the yeshiva sukkah. The yeshiva has a very small sukkah. So there's one guy who already chops the major space in the small sukkah. And then the second guy comes, and he wants to also sleep in the sukkah. I should mention it happens to be sukkahs. So normally, so here the Yerushalmi was saying that if the second guy goes to sleep, it's his fault. But what if he has the mitzvah to blame it on? So do we call that hichnis bereshus? Now this again opens up a whole other topic that we're not going to get into today. I may have alluded to it at some point. God willing, we'll have an opportunity. It has, actually, it has connections both to Hanukkah and Purim, so maybe one context to the other. Definitely by one or the other we should talk about this. But the question of somebody who is mazik in the context of pursuing a mitzvah. So the Gemara has a discussion there that is pater because it's hizik bereshus. So we have to figure out what that means. It's a little bit of a scary idea because... Does anyone want to come?
Where was that again?
That Gemara is on the base. But the idea, we have to figure out what its parameters are. It's I don't want to get into too much of it now because it's on sugya in itself, but it sounds like, just like the rush that we mentioned about Shein Bereshus Aravim, if that's based on the idea that the person is doing what he's allowed to be doing. So that's why he's Pater. So if you say a mitzvah also creates that Rishus, so then that might be, but then that creates a very scary world. There's one contemporary author who wrote about this and said everyone's got to walk around with armor because who knows, maybe somebody else is rushing to get to a bris or to shear or whatever it is. So where are we going to draw the line? How exactly are we going to live if people are always off the hook because they are considered to be justified because they're pursuing the mitzvah? So we have to figure out exactly what that means. But here, so Zilberstein considers, says, should we say that the second guy who, Artosis just said, the second guy who comes in, he's chayiv, but maybe in the case of the sukkah, the second guy who comes in should be pater because he's hichnis bereshus. So what do you think about that? What would you say to that case? That's a good response. Right? Sorry? Ah, okay, right. That's my fault. We haven't taught it yet, but we'll get it just on the surface. So what was the Avera? Because you say, because apparently that creates a dangerous situation. So that's interesting. It doesn't go exactly there. It goes somewhere close to there, though. This is, yeah. Well, the Pshia seems to be the issue, which is where Shmuel is calling it Avera, which is interesting. But he, sorry? So Garmi, also have to figure out where Garmi fits in this whole story, which is also very interesting. I think we'll get to that more a little bit tomorrow. But he, where he goes with this, is Teshvu Kain Taduru. He says that since this is a dangerous place to be, so you wouldn't do that in your house, you wouldn't set things up that way, so therefore he thinks it's fundamentally removed from the mitzvah to begin with, because... Sorry? Not that the sukkah is possible, but that this guy is not justified in sleeping in that position if it's really so close that it's dangerous, so he wouldn't do that in the house. So, sorry? Yeah, basically he doesn't have the mitzvah to blame it on. Now, it's interesting. Yeah. It's interesting, there could be another element here. So, put that aside for a second and we'll come back to it, this question about the sukkah. Tosfos's position that this Adam Mu'ad Olam is essentially not absolute, right? And it's not going to apply to somebody who went to sleep when it was safe and it became complicated while he was asleep. So how do you square that with the idea of Adamu or La'olam? Right? So La'olam sounds pretty absolute. And all of a sudden, it's not so absolute. So what is the key factor that changed things here? Maury?
The Nisa is putting down.
Okay. So that is the position of the Ramban. Did you guys get up to the Ramban yet? Okay, so the Ramban, hopefully we'll get to it tomorrow. This is important machlokas. We have to see again how much time we'll even spend on it because it's a major sugya, and we are, I guess, trying to front load some of these things, so maybe we will have an opportunity to get into it in some depth. But essentially, there is a major machlokas rishonim how this idea squares with Adamu v'Olam. Because it seems like the idea of Adamu v'Olam means that there's no p'tur of onus. That we don't say you're off the hook ever because it wasn't your fault. But essentially, we say it is your fault. We say that Adamu v'Olam, a person, is always responsible. So, apparently not. Apparently a person is not always responsible. Hi.
I just wonder if we're maybe viewing it as like the same thing as me putting an object next to a windmill.
Uh-huh.
So on the Nizak, the guy is asleep, you know. It's me breaking objects essentially. By placing
Who's me in this case?
The Nizak is breaking something.
Okay, so again, that also sounds more like the Ramban's part, but let's figure out exactly what you're emphasizing. Because Tosfos understands, Tosfos on Chav Zayin, had a chance to see that yet? You'll see it tomorrow. And Tosfos understands that we don't really mean it absolutely. We don't really mean to say that Adam HaMazik is Chayiv even Ba'ones. Because how can you hold somebody liable for something that was really against their will, out of their power? Correct. So we have to assume that onus has different divisions. So how would you phrase the chiluk? Okay, that's one way to put it. We also draw... Sorry? Right. Those are all valid distinctions. We also call it... Dan, did you want to say something? Onus kein aveda and onus kein gneva. Right, that there's one that's compared to something getting lost, and there's an onus that's compared to gneva, which suggests different levels of out of your control. That when you lose something or when something gets stolen, in both cases, you didn't want it to happen. This wasn't something that you either did yourself or wanted to do. So that should be a pretty low level. But there's still a difference that if somebody loses something, so then they probably could have still been more on top of it. They could have still prevented it. And if somebody gets robbed, okay, so then that's completely imposed upon them without their will at all. Right, so we basically have four levels. You could do something intentionally. You could do something unintentionally. Or you didn't even do it at all. But you didn't do it at all and maybe you could have prevented it. That would be level three. Or you didn't do it at all and it really wasn't in your control, bechlal.
Did it match up also?
Match up to what?
Onus gomer is onus. Onus kikzila and onus...
Right, exactly. So those are all different ways of saying the same idea. But it gives us four distinct levels there. So that's what Tos is going to say. That listen, if a guy goes to sleep... So his light's out. He is not responsible for... He's not aware of anything. And he couldn't even have been more careful in how he chose the place. So then, what do you want from him? So that's essentially Onas Gomer. While the Ramban makes a different distinction. And some of you have alluded to it. And that is that here you have what's known as contributory negligence. That the Nizak also has an achrayus to watch out for his own stuff. And if he endangers his stuff, so then that's his fault. So that's essentially the Ramban's chiddush here. Yes, sir?
It seems like between that and the combination of where the Gemara uses the Lashon Orche, it seems like we could then view this, while we say Adam Mulalim, it seems like it would seem as something that is along the lines of Shein Regal, which would mean that, if in a case, which would mean that someone would be liable to watch their own stuff, would not.
I say the last part again.
It seems to work well with what we said before in the case of animal damages and the case of, and like with the Gemara where it says where it specifically says it says orche,
mm-hmm.
doesn't it? I might have misread. But it says orche.
Yep.
It says that. So if we say that to an extent that someone that the nizak would be responsible for his own things, and this is to an extent orche, then maybe
since it's orche for a sleeping person to flop around, to toss and turn, so therefore you have a responsibility to be liable for yourself.
Such as we did right.
No, so that's it. It does seem to emerge from that kind of a point. Maury?
We can probably back up with some other things we said earlier, especially even that Kastechoshan or the Svar of the Rosh and the Rif.
Well, it does connect, which I think is Daniel's point, right? That there's some kind of analysis here of what's considered normal, and when something is normal, so then the achrayus shifts to someone else.
So what we suggested before about somebody would be like resting like my glass or whatever on a windmill and then breaking, it's
mm-hmm.
on the windmill.
Right. Now this is interesting on a lot of levels. So we have a few more minutes here. I'm going to add a few more points. But certainly they're going to have a lot more to say about this tomorrow also. But there's a lot that emerges from this issue. So first, just to keep it very local for a second, so about the sleeping situation, which is a pretty narrow kind of scenario. So can you think of some nafkaminas between the Tosfos and the Ramban in terms of our Tosfos on this daf and its formulation as understood by the other Tosfos and the Ramban? How would that maybe affect things? Maury?
I saw nafkamina. And see.
Ah, okay. Yeah, very good. You saw it somewhere? Okay, so the Svarim talk about that. That's an interesting question. So, what happens if you wake up in the middle? Right. So, let's say you can't be held liable, says Tosus later on, if when you went to sleep, it was free of anything. But what happens if you woke up in the middle, saw it was there, and then went back to sleep? Does that reset the clock? So that's something that we'll maybe explore a little bit more tomorrow. And another question is, if we're focusing on the contributory negligence of the nizak, so then there's another nafkamina maybe you could think of. Well, who is it who's putting this item next to you when you're sleeping? Does it have to be specifically the nizak? Or what if it's someone else? Sorry? Yeah, or of anybody. What if it's any third party?
Okay.
Right, but it could be, in this case, probably could be anyone. Right, so let's say any third party comes and puts it there. Is it davka because the owner is negligent in protecting his own stuff? So both of those scenarios are discussed in Achronim. So maybe we will say a little bit more about that. But to plug back into Rav Zilberstein's Silke case, so it's just interesting because the whole Ratzper Shus Gemara that I mentioned before is tricky, because are we ready to live in a world where everyone's off the hook when they're running to a shir or running to a bris or who knows what? It's going to make our society kind of dangerous. The firmer our society is, the more dangerous it's going to be. The people are going to all have this mitzvah exemption. So some of the achronim, starting with the Chavos Yair and others, say, no, there is no such thing. Doesn't mean that any pursuit of a mitzvah is going to get you off the hook. But what it means is that in the case of the Gemara is talking about, say, for example, Erev Shabbos. So Erev Shabbos, everyone is holding by Erev Shabbos. Everyone knows. And certainly Bezman Hazeh, we all know in certain neighborhoods, right, that Friday afternoon in the winter is a hectic time. So people are running around. So if somebody has his property out there in public, he has a greater responsibility to watch his stuff than he normally does. So that understanding, it goes to this factor the Ramban is talking about, Ramban Bava Metzia is talking about, right, that sometimes there's a greater liability assigned to the Nizak. The Nizak has to be more careful with his stuff, and that shifts the blame. So it's just interesting. I wonder, in terms of Rav Zilberstein's psak, so I'm sympathetic to it because, like I said, I share the concern that some of the Sfarim have brought up, that how can we say that people are pater from the hezek they do when they're pursuing a mitzvah? It's a pretty dangerous precedent. So his maskana there, that we're not going to get the second guy off the hook because he was pursuing the mitzvah. But it's just interesting that if the idea is that when it's a dua mitzvah, then people themselves should be more aware, so then maybe a counter argument could be made that a guy goes to sleep in the sukkah of the yeshiva, it's not even his own sukkah in that scenario, a guy goes to sleep in the sukkah that belongs to other people too, so maybe he should have expected that there's a good chance somebody else is going to be sleeping in there later. When a person goes to sleep in his own bed or in some area that he has designated for himself, so that, okay, he has a reason to assume no one else is going to show up. But when it's there's a reason that's a mitzvah to do that, so then not because the mitzvah is a get-out-of-jail-free card, but because if the svar of the Chavos Yair is correct, that the person should know that this is conceivable, so then maybe you could say that every man for himself in the situation, that he knows that he's sleeping in a place where it's very likely that someone else is going to think that they also need a place over there. So it's an interesting question to clarify what exactly the patur is coming from. So we have still some things to fill in about sleeping. Sleeping remains an interesting topic. But what maybe is clear here is that this goes way beyond just sleeping. Right? The question of who is liable for pretty much every hezek situation, you know, is it the person who caused the damaging force, or is the person who exposed the object to danger in the first place, as we find in discussion here. And I'm sure, as you can imagine, there are many scenarios where there are candidates for each possibility. So there is a lot that's going to emerge from here. And God willing, we will see a little bit of that as well. So sleeping is always appealing, even outside the parameters of this topic, of this local topic of sleeping, we'll see it's going to have many, many implications for how Nezikin is assigned Bichlal. So just to quickly, Chazer, we speak about, so we added the Palge Mayim's comments, or a little bit of Palge Mayim's comments about sentimental value. We talked about the Machlokas, the Chafetz Chaim, and the Chazon Ish, about somebody who breaks a window in a house. How do you assess that? Do you figure out how the value of the house? How did it change? Or the cost of the window? And his chiluk in the Nesivis, that the Nesivis only says that you look at it based on what it sold in the store once we're talking about paying for it, but there's also a separate obligation to restore the item. And if that's possible, the Nesivis would agree that you do that. And then we got into this sugya where the Gemara talks about Adam Muad and the status of even unconsciousness, even when he's asleep. And this very important Yerushalmi that modifies what the Gemara sounds like. The Gemara sounds like when somebody tosses and turns in his sleep and creates a hezek, and the Mishnah said that later on, that that is a liability for him. But the Rishonim gives us a very important distinction that that's only if everything was in place when he went to sleep. But if something came and somebody came and added some kalim there while he was awake, so while he was asleep, rather, so then that person is liable. And we saw a major machlokas as to why that is. Tosfos later on in the Masechta says because Adam is not always liable, that there is such a thing as onus gomer, onus kein geneva, where the person really had no brayer here. And Ramban in Bava Metzia says differently, that it has to do with the contributory negligence of the nizak. And we looked how that affects Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein's question about somebody sleeping in the yeshiva sukkah and somebody else comes along. And we mentioned there are other nafkaminas that we'll have to explore, such as the person wakes up in the middle, or if a person who brings the kalim is not the nizak himself, and a couple of other dimensions that we will have to explore. God willing, we will see tomorrow. So we don't have to consider the question of whether somebody who's sleeping is Mustari Flaminian, because who wants to daven for us? All right.